And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday afternoon as we recap and break down everything that happened over the weekend. Coming up, our winners and losers from the college football weekend. Of course, the Gamecocks, one of those big-time winners. What is going on with Florida? A big win for South Carolina. Clemson finds a way to get by. I'll give you my thoughts and breakdowns of all the NFL games from over the weekend. Who can you trust in the NFL right now? Why the NFL is similar to college football. The winners in the NFL didn't even step on the field this weekend. People sharing the same names. We got a lot to get to from over the football weekend, and we'll do it over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout as well, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. There you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday, recapping everything from the football weekend. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? We had a weekend with how many? Seven? Top 25 teams losing to unranked teams this weekend.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, and a foxy interruption during the Arizona State-Southern Cal game.
Yes, a fox ran onto the field. Now, I guess that's apparently a common thing around there. Well, you lived in that area, right? They said there's a family of foxes that live next to the stadium, and so they commonly, people that work at the stadium say, oh, yeah, we see the foxes all the time. But it ran on the field, and then it ran into the stands and was running around up the stands. If I was sitting in the stands, I know it wasn't like the biggest fox. It looked like a little, you know, maybe like a little baby one. I don't know my foxes too well. I'd be a little startled if I had a fox running around the stadium. I'm trying to watch a football game. And they were saying, people from Arizona State were saying, oh, yeah, that's the family. They live outside the stadium. We see them all the time. No problem. To me, that's a problem. I go to a football game, and a fox shows up, and he's running around. That's a problem for me.
Well, maybe somebody from that little, I think it's a, what do you call a family of foxes?
I have no idea.
But anyway, from the bunch that decided, well, if we live next to the stadium, there's football games going on. We might as well take in a game,
yeah,
you know, now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. I went running out in the field. They had one of the best runs of the game. Every Monday we come in, we get to our winners and our losers from the college football weekend. Of course, I have plenty of both. I got a list of 8 winners. 8 losers as well. It's how we always start the week. We get right to it. Starting with the winners, number one, and I rank them in order of importance as well, but number one on the list of the winners and the losers, number one's Georgia, because they won over the weekend, and they remain the number one team, and they're the only dominant team in college football, the only team that you can trust right now in college football. NFL similar. We'll get to that later on this afternoon. But in college, it's Georgia. And they do it with the backup quarterback, Stetson Bennett, who now has over 230 yards in 3 of the last 4 games played. He's one of just 3 quarterbacks to average over 10 yards per pass attempt this year. Now, this Georgia team is not as talented offensively as LSU was 2 years ago, Alabama last year, but the defense is so good, better than those two teams, you wonder if anybody is going to be able to challenge them. If an Ohio State goes up against them, even in Alabama, can they do enough offensively to challenge the Georgia offense? And Georgia's wide receivers are getting healthier. We'll see if JT Daniels plays a substantial role the rest of the way. Stetson Bennett has improved. And then the real test for Georgia, I don't know if I should say real test, but what's interesting is the upcoming game against Tennessee, because Tennessee moves really quickly. They can score a lot of points. They just dropped 45 on the road against Kentucky. Hayden Hooker had 4 touchdowns. I'm not telling you that Tennessee is going to beat Georgia or score a bunch of points on Georgia, but Georgia has passed every test to this point. This is now the next test of dealing with an offense like this. If you're a Gamecock fan, you saw it earlier this year. Gave the Gamecocks, obviously, a lesser defense, but gave them a lot of trouble. Gives a lot of teams a lot of trouble. Gave Kentucky, a pretty good defensive team, some trouble on Saturday. An offense that moves quickly, fast-paced. They'll throw it a bunch. They can score quickly. How are they going to fare against Georgia? And if Georgia holds them to, you know, only like 10 points or even 14 points, you come out of there thinking like, wow, this defense really is elite. Nobody can give them a hard time. Georgia right now, statistically, this is the best defense we've had in 30 years. The next test will be Tennessee on this upcoming Saturday, which will have an offense go up against Georgia like we haven't seen. They haven't seen an offense like this just yet. Are they up to that test on Saturday? Number two on the list of winners is Brohm at Purdue. Of course, Purdue, but most notably, the coach, Jeff Brohm. 0 winning regular seasons with Purdue. They're now 6-3 right now. If they win one more game, he'll have his best season at Purdue from a record standpoint. Not only that, but the wins they've gotten along the way. He is now 5-5 in his last 10 games against ranked opponents. That's good, especially when you're coaching at Purdue. To go 500 against ranked teams, when Purdue, by the way, has been unranked for those games, right? You go 5-5 against ranked opponents, that's pretty good. And Purdue just became the first team in 15 seasons to beat 2 top 5 teams while unranked. We compare this college football season to the 2007 college football season. And in that comparison, this Purdue team is like 2007 Illinois, who was 5-3, and then Illinois beat back-to-back ranked teams, back-to-back top 10 teams. And by the end of the year, Illinois was in the Rose Bowl. Purdue, unranked, playing about 500 football, they beat 2 top 5 teams, and they're the first to do it and win both games by double digits. The first time we've had an unranked team beat 2 top 5 teams by double digits. They just took down Michigan State on Saturday, and if you watch the game, they were the better team. And they came out. The big thing for Brohm, he's an offensive coach. The offense has kind of struggled. It didn't on Saturday. Not against a team that's supposed to be about its defense. So they've become, right, they're the giant slayer right now, Purdue. And next up, Ohio State. Look out, Ohio State coming up on Saturday, because Purdue, apparently, right, that's the last team you want to face if you're a top 5, top 10 team. They've been beating all these big boys. By the way, first team since Clemson in 2003 to beat multiple top 10 teams by double digits while unranked. For Purdue, both of their teams are top 5. But if you expand that search criteria to find the last time a team got close to doing what Purdue just did, you have to go back to 2003 Clemson, when it was 2 top 10 teams, not just top 5. Number 3 on the list of winners from over the weekend, this is where I put the Gamecocks. It was their largest margin of victory against Florida, most points scored against Florida, huge win in year one of Shane Beamer. And now you take on Missouri this week in a winnable game, and if you win that one, you're heading to a bowl in year one of Shane Beamer, which was the goal, or at least should have been, to start the year. That is like your Super Bowl. You get to a bowl in year one, you beat Florida along the way. I said, and we'll get more into this throughout the afternoon, including coming up in just a little bit, but I said for South Carolina, you win the games you're supposed to, you pull off one upset, you get to a bowl, that's a great year. That's what they did. Florida's not the same Florida, but they were favored by 20. That's a big-time upset. You were a 20-point dog, and you win by 23. A 43-point swing compared to the expected outcome. That's big time. And for Shane Beamer to get a win like this in year one, also big. Now, we may look back and say, like, oh, you know what, that win against Florida is not so good. But don't forget the fact that heading into this, 20-point underdog. Not expected to win, expected to get blown out. They did the blowing out instead. And Beamer needed to show something. That's what I said from day one. For year one for the Gamecocks, you're not going to compete for the SEC. The biggest question to answer is, do you have the right guy? And this was a big win in year one to go out there and win against Florida. Because when you watch that game on Saturday, you had a coach who's been here for half a season. You had a coach who, on the other sideline, has been here for 3.5 seasons and just had Florida in the SEC championship last year. Watch that game and tell me which team was playing more for their coach. Florida looked like they quit on their coach. South Carolina was fired up, looking for the opportunity of Florida coming into their building, coming off a bye. Their best performance of the season, coming off a bye. Good coaches take advantage of extra time. That's what the Gamecocks did. That's a big-time win to beat Florida the way they did on Saturday. With that said, maybe a little bit of a reality check. They're an underdog Saturday against Missouri. So they're still a dog against Missouri on Saturday on the road. But you win that game, you go to a bowl. It's a classic letdown spot after what just happened Saturday, but we'll get to that later in the week. In the meantime, if you're a Gamecock fan, enjoy this win because it was a great win for South Carolina, and it's exactly what you needed to see out of year one from Shane Beamer. He needed one of these wins, and he got it already year one against Florida. Big-time win. Number four on the list of winners from Saturday, Sam Pittman, because he not only beat a ranked team, now it helped that Mississippi State missed three kicks, and Mike Leach afterwards, that's why a lot of players don't like Mike Leach. He got to the podium after and said that they're holding open tryouts for any students to come kick for their team moving forward, right? Throwing his kickers under the bus to the media after they just missed a game-tying field goal attempt. You don't think they're feeling bad about it? And then their coach is making fun of them at the podium. That's why a lot of players transfer out of Leach's programs. We also have the story about him locking kids in a closet years ago. Right, you may love the funny quotes at the podium. A lot of people have an issue with Mike Leach and how he treats people around him. Besides the point, Sam Pittman got a big win for Arkansas over the weekend. He's now heading to his first bowl game, or I should say Arkansas is heading to their first bowl game in 5 years, and Sam Pittman has more wins in his first season and a half with Arkansas than they had in the previous three seasons combined. He's done a fantastic job there at Arkansas. They just got another win against a ranked team. They're heading to a bowl game. Job well done by Sam Pittman. Number five on the list of winners from Saturday, Alabama. Yes, I put Alabama on the list of winners. They looked vulnerable. They looked bad. It looked like they didn't show up either. In fact, you could see the video online that Ed Orgeron told his team very early in the first quarter they didn't come ready to play, and they didn't. And you could see that watching that game. I bet on Alabama to cover the first half number of 17, and I knew very early on, halfway through the first quarter, I said, nope, that was a bad play. They are not going to get this done. Not in the first half. I thought Alabama would eventually kick it into gear and pull away, and they never did. Came down to the very end. That's a bad win for Alabama. The reason why I put them on this list, though, is because they did win. Michigan State did not. Other teams in the top 25, as mentioned, already did not. Wake Forest blew their opportunity. Even within the SEC, you had Auburn lose. Auburn was in control of their own destiny, so that helps out Alabama. Point being, other teams lost, didn't take care of business. Alabama played their worst performance of the year and probably in a long time and still found a way to get out of there with a victory. But to only have 6 rushing yards, to get beat in the trenches, that was a bad performance by Alabama. There's a reason why the committee put them at number 2 to give them as much buffer space as possible. You watch that game coming away from college football on Saturday, and you wonder, who is the next best team after Georgia? The real winner in that game, probably Ed Orgeron, because he got his team to still show up, fight, and play hard, even when he's already been essentially fired. Number 6 on the list of winners is the real winner out of the SEC, Texas A&M. I probably should put them higher on the list, but I put them at number 6. Not only did they get the win on Saturday against Auburn, but they showed they are, once again, the third best team in the SEC. Florida, terrible. Kentucky, they've lost 3 in a row. Auburn, well, they just lost to Texas A&M. Texas A&M is the third best team in the SEC. And if they just get a little help, ironically, from the team they just beat, if A&M wins out and Auburn beats Alabama in the Iron Bowl, which is a realistic possibility, Texas A&M is back in first in that division. They have the tiebreaker over Alabama. Plus, when you look at the recruiting rankings, there's a chance Alabama, or I should say Texas A&M, could still put together the number 1 recruiting class. And this was a big weekend for recruiting for all teams. A&M had the second largest crowd all time in program history. They got a win against a ranked team at home, won by 17. So Jimbo Fisher doing well in terms of winning the games on the field, but also they're doing a really good job in recruiting as well. Texas A&M, a big winner over the weekend. Number 7 on the list, Scott Frost, head coach of Nebraska. Now, sure, he's only 10-23 in the Big Ten, and he's on the hot seat, you know, seemingly every year. And Nebraska needs more than just moral victories. But look at this season for Nebraska. Every single one of their losses this year has been by 1 score outside of Saturday. This past Saturday, that was their largest loss of the season. It was to Ohio State, the number 5 team in the country, by 9 when they were a 16-point underdog. They lost to 3 top 10 teams this year, Nebraska has, by 7 points or less, and then a 4th one, Ohio State, by 9 on Saturday. All of their losses have been by single digits. They lost to Purdue by 5, right? All of their losses by single digits against ranked teams, most of them. So eventually, you're going to have to turn these into wins. You can't keep selling your job on moral victories or getting close. But Scott Frost in Nebraska, they're a better program than people think. He's doing a better job than in the past. He's showing signs of getting this team a little bit closer to where they hope to be. Now he just needs to take that next step forward, say next year, and start winning these games. But Nebraska is probably the most underrated team that nobody thinks about. They're tough. They play all of these teams really hard. And lastly, number 8 on the list of winners, Arizona, because they snapped their 20-game losing streak. They held Cal to only 122 yards and 3 points. Now, forget the fact that Cal was missing 24 players because of COVID, including their starting quarterback. Forget that, because if you're Arizona, you'll take a win any way you can get it. Their first win in 762 days. And they snapped the longest losing streak currently in college football at 20 games. Next up, UNLV. They have a 14-game losing streak. UConn snapped their losing streak. Arizona has now. Now it's on UNLV to snap their 14-game losing streak. Those are the winners. Now let's get to our intro. We had some things going on behind the scenes. Those are the 8 winners. I also got 8 losers for you from the college football
weekend.
Here's
what I want you to look at. There are winners.
You're all winners.
There are losers.
Well, I guess I'm a loser. A loser.
And there are people who have not discovered how to win.
Breaks things up as well. Number 1 loser, Cincinnati. That game against Tulsa, Cincinnati is kneeling out the football. They fumble, like as Herm Edwards at the Meadowlands 50 years ago. Tulsa gets the football back. It takes a goal line stand by Cincinnati to pull out the win. That was not a good win. They've had 3 straight bad wins. College Game Day was there on Saturday. All eyes were on Cincinnati. They were favored by almost 25. It came down to a goal line stand at the end of the game to win. 3 straight close calls for Cincinnati when they're trying to sell us that they're one of the best teams in the country. You ever have that friend who had like the overbearing mother? Or maybe if you're a teacher or a coach, you've dealt with somebody like this, and the mother comes to you and she's complaining about the kid, right? Maybe the kid, she thinks the kid should have more playing time. But you know, because you're the coach, you're at practice and game every day, you realize the kid's not interested. He doesn't want to be out there. The mother's making him play basketball, but he doesn't want to play basketball. And at practice, right, he's not interested. Or on the soccer team, he's over, you know, picking flowers instead. He has no interest in playing soccer. And the mother is giving you a hard time because she thinks he should be in there and playing more. And you have to tell him, like, look, your kid's not interested. He doesn't want to be here. All right? So pay attention to what he wants instead of what you want. And I say all that because Cincinnati's like that. We're trying to force-feed Cincinnati into this playoff conversation because we all want the group of 5 to be represented. Turns out they're like that kid picking daisies at soccer practice. Cincinnati's not interested in being there. They've played 3 straight close games. Everyone's fighting for them. Cincinnati should be in the top 4. They get no respect. Have you watched the games the last few weeks and you want to put them in there instead of an Ohio State or even an Oklahoma or these teams that are playing in Power 5 conferences? This is not a playoff team, and they're making it very hard to fight on their behalf. Just like that kid is making it very hard for the mother to continue to fight on his behalf. You know, he'd rather eat potato skins on the sideline than actually practice with us. That's a story for my life, for maybe another day. But Cincinnati showing they don't maybe want the same thing everybody else wants. And it's not that simple, but that's how it appears. Everyone's fighting for them to be in the playoff. They're not fighting for themselves. Too many close calls lately. They're not a playoff team. Number 2 on the list of losers, the ACC. Yeah, of course, Wake Forest. The first time they made it to the top 10, and they lose week 1 as a top 10 team, first time in program history. But more so the ACC, because you can cross that conference off. The ACC is not getting a playoff team. It was already a long shot to begin with. Now Wake Forest loses. Sorry, ACC. You're this year's Pac-12. You're forgotten. We move on from you. For Wake Forest, their defense just isn't good enough. They've allowed over 500 yards in 4 of the last 5 games. They surrendered 56 points to Army while Army had the football for most of the game. Not good enough. Number 3 on the list of losers, of course, Dan Mullen. Just 2-8 in his last 10 games against Power 5 teams. You know who else is 2-8 in their last 10 against Power 5 teams? Syracuse, Duke, the Gamecocks. That's the company Florida is keeping right now. Arizona is 1-9. Not much of a difference. Vanderbilt and Kansas, 0-10. They're next on the list. That's the company Florida is keeping right now. That's pathetic. Ed Orgeron got fired. His team still plays hard for him at LSU. Dan Mullen is not fired, at least not yet. They were in the SEC title game last year, and yet his team has quit on him. That is not good. And in this 10-game stretch, they've had three losses as Florida as an 11-point or more favorite. And they've lost three of those games outright, including Saturday against South Carolina. Can't happen. Vegas is wrong every once in a while, but if you're a 20-point favorite, you can't lose by 23. They're usually not that wrong when it comes to predicting who the better team is. Florida has more talent. The difference is they were uninterested. They didn't care. South Carolina wanted it more. They played much better on Saturday. That's an indictment on Florida's head coach. Number four on the list of losers, Michigan State. First week that you're in the playoff rankings, we're talking about you. Oh, this team, they just beat Michigan. Take them for real. And they go and they lose to an unranked Purdue. Now, the season is still ahead of Michigan State because they play Ohio State. They got to win that game. But they've allowed over 550 yards in each of their last two games. Questions about that defense, which got them here to begin with. Number five on the list of losers, Jimmy Lake, head coach at Washington. He made some comments this week about how, we don't recruit. We don't go in recruiting battles against Oregon because we recruit kids that get good grades. That's paraphrasing, but that was the message he sent. That no, we actually don't battle with Oregon because we recruit kids that have to be good students as well. And people were very upset with Jimmy Lake's comments this week. That's fine. Take a shot publicly. But then you go out there and your team lost to Oregon on Saturday. And Jimmy Lake's in hot water because he hit one of his players in the head during a little bit of a melee during the game. And now that's being investigated by the school. And then they actually lost the game. And then he had to fire his offensive coordinator because somebody else needed to be blamed. And he's only 502 years after taking over for Chris Peterson there. And the program has moved in the wrong direction. Fans are not happy. They want Jimmy gone. He's kind of on the hot seat already 2 years in. It's been a tough week. It's been a tough stretch. It's been a tough year for Jimmy Lake at Washington. And who knows, with this whole thing about hitting a player, teams are always looking for opportunities to get out of contracts for struggling coaches. Maybe this leads to the downfall and his dismissal there. I don't know. But I know a lot of people in and out of that program are unhappy these days with Jimmy Lake. And when you go out there and you lose, that doesn't help. Number six is Auburn on the list of losers because they controlled their own destiny. If they won out the rest of the way, they'd be in the SEC championship. And yet they laid an egg Saturday, granted against a good Texas A&M team, but they scored only 3 points, had only 225 yards, got beat by 17. It wasn't as close as the score indicated. It was an ugly game. It was close for the first half. Texas A&M pulled away. It was an ugly, boring game. If you watch that game, maybe you're the real loser for spending 3 hours on that ugly contest. Auburn, number six. Number seven's Kentucky, sticking in the SEC. Since getting to number 11 in the polls, Kentucky, they've lost three straight games. They've allowed over 30 points in all three games for a defensive team. The good news is, next up, they have Vanderbilt, New Mexico State, and Louisville. So they very easily could end with three victories. But for Kentucky, they want it to be taken seriously, number 11 team in the country, and then they go off and they lose three straight, including Saturday at home to Tennessee, who scored almost half a hundred. Not a good look for Kentucky the last couple weeks. And lastly, on my long list of winners and losers from the college football weekend, the number eight loser is Minnesota. Because Minnesota was in first place in their division in the Big Ten, they too controlled their own destiny. And they still kind of do if they win out. There's the chance we could have a four-way tie. There's four teams right now with the same record at the top of that division. They all play each other. I don't know how the tiebreaker is going to work. Minnesota still has a chance, but they were in total control heading into Saturday. Now it's going to depend on some tiebreakers, maybe some losses over here. I can't figure it out. Point being, for Minnesota, you had your season ahead of you, and you lost at home to Illinois. You scored only 6 points. Illinois had only 80 passing yards and still won the game. Minnesota, that was a bad loss after already losing to Bowling Green this year. A couple of bad losses for them. And maybe the real loser in all this is Bert Bielema, who I ripped a couple of weeks ago for throwing his players under the bus, and since doing that, they've beaten two ranked teams since then. All right, so now I hope you thank Lovie Smith once again for those players he left you that are beating ranked teams suddenly. Winners and losers from the college football weekend, eight of each on a long-winded start here on a Monday afternoon with plenty to react to throughout the afternoon. One of those winners, the Gamecocks. When we come back, we'll focus on them. Shane Beamer getting the win he needed on Saturday. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Shane Beamer got the win he needed on Saturday. It's the More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. On the text line, somebody tells me that a family of foxes are called kits.
So somebody from the kit decided to take in the game.
Yeah, I guess so. Is that accurate? A kit? That doesn't sound right. I don't know. What do I know? What do I know about foxes?
Well, it's also a term that's kind of fallen out of use through the years, but it was also a term for a very attractive woman.
That's right. Like this song, Foxy Lady. There's a great scene in Seinfeld at Festivus when the guys from the horse racing off-track betting show up to dinner, and one of the guys says that to Elaine. I think you're a fox. And there's some funny outtakes from it because they couldn't get through that line without everyone busting out at the table laughing. Yeah, I don't know if that's a term that's used anymore or as common these days. A fox ran on the field at one of the games over the weekend, hence now this fox theme to the Monday afternoon. Wait, you got something else on foxes?
Oh, I have several more.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I look forward to that throughout the afternoon. Gamecocks got their big win Saturday against Florida. You know, you look at these two programs now. Both are 2-8 in their last 10 against Power 5 programs. South Carolina currently has a better recruiting class than Florida for 2022. When they both got onto the field Saturday, South Carolina whooped up on Florida by over 20 points. Point being, you know, if you're Dan Mullen right now or a Florida fan and you're looking at your program, I'm not going to be all hyperbolic and tell you this is Clemson, Alabama from a few years ago where we all thought, you know, oh, Clemson just passed Alabama. I'm not telling you South Carolina is passing Florida by. I mean, the Gamecocks are an underdog against Missouri on Saturday still. So Vegas saw that game and looked at it and thought, like, yeah, maybe that's more about Florida than South Carolina. It was a great win for the Gamecocks. But the point being, if you're Florida or Dan Mullen or a Florida fan, you look at your program and you think, like, wow, we are moving in a terrible direction. We have the same record as South Carolina the last 10 games against Power 5 teams. They're doing a better job recruiting than we are right now, and they just whooped us on the field. What is going on here? Now, Florida has responded by making some moves, removing the defensive coordinator and the offensive line coach. It was kind of a matter of time. And that's, you know, feeding something to the crowd with the pitchforks that's not Dan Mullen. You're trying to buy some time there. I think Dan Mullen is still safe, but we talked about this last week heading into this game. What happens if he does lose Saturday to South Carolina? And now that has happened, if you're Dan Mullen, I mean, you really got to be sweating it out. I think he's still bringing back because if you look at Dan, he's had success every season until this one. Are you not allowed a down year, right? If that was the case, you know, like, would you be firing Dabo right now because Clemson's having a down year? And, of course, Clemson more successful the last couple of years than Florida. But go look at what Mullen has done at Florida. He's had a good season up until now where it is a train wreck, no doubt. He loses some games he shouldn't lose even before this season. Last year against LSU, a big game late in the season. There are plenty of concerns with Dan Mullen. He's not very polished at the podium. He ticks people off. His recruiting hasn't been quite good enough at Florida. There are plenty of concerns or cons or weaknesses to the head coach of Florida. But I don't think you move on from just one down year. I think you give him a chance to turn it around. And if next year is much of the same, then it's like, okay, yeah, maybe this isn't salvageable. In the meantime, they move on from their defensive coordinator, who many didn't think was going to be back this year anyways. His contract expiring at the end of the season, so that's not much of a, you know, that's not a big deal for Florida. They just sped up the process. Probably we're going to go in another direction this offseason to begin with, but somebody needs to take the fall for what happened on Saturday against South Carolina. So for the time being, the assistants are the ones. And when you look at Florida and Dan Mullen, compare it to what you just saw from LSU and Ed Orgeron. His team went out there and battled against Alabama, and they hung in there. And it came down to the very end, and they had every chance to win that game against the number two team in the country. In fact, in many ways, LSU outplayed Alabama on Saturday, especially in the trenches and when it came to running the football. Then you look at Florida, who is playing for a coach that hasn't been fired yet and led them to, you know, an SEC championship game last year, and that team quit on him. They have completely quit the last couple of weeks. That was embarrassing on Saturday. But on the flip side, I always say that the interesting story is always in the losing locker room. But in this case, on the winning locker room is the one that you care about more because it's the Gamecocks. And that's a big-time win for Shane Beamer to get that done in year one. No, it's maybe not the same Florida team from a year ago or historically the same type of Florida team you're dealing with, but it's still a big-time win. If you are a 20-point underdog and you win by 23 and you blow out anybody in the conference like that, that's big time. Anybody that's not Vanderbilt. You get any sort of win in the SEC as a rebuilding program, you win by over 20 points against anyone that isn't Vanderbilt, that's a good win. And you could see it Saturday and Beamer's reaction afterwards, and he's hugging his father on the field and the whole family, and you know the crowd was into it. It was, at least on TV, looked like a fun environment. Of course it is when you're blowing out a team like that. And you had, you know, the new quarterback comes in and he plays really well. And for a moment, Marcus Satterfield, everyone wanted his job. He looks like a smartest guy in the building on Saturday. First time they scored over 23 points this year. The most impressive stat is that South Carolina averaged 9 yards per play on first down. That's how you have success on offense. Right, you pick up a first down, almost a first down, every time you snap it on first down. And then now you got second and one. You take some shots downfield if you wish. And you got everything ahead of you because you're ahead of the chains. Best win they've had against Florida. They do it with a third-string quarterback. Big-time win. Now, again, not the same Florida team. South Carolina is still an underdog Saturday against Missouri. But two reasons why that was so important, what we saw in that performance on Saturday. Number one, because now you're one win away from going to a bowl game. And that is a big accomplishment in year one of Shane Beamer rebuilding this program. That should have been the goal at the start of the year. But number two, because for Shane Beamer, you get that, I would say, signature win. I don't think that's too strong of a word. You get that signature victory for year one. You go and you beat Clemson in a few weeks, then that becomes even a bigger win. But you beat Florida at home and the way you beat them as well. Because as I said, all offseason, throughout this season, all you're looking for if you're the Gamecocks, of course, going to a bowl game would be great. But what you're looking for is seeing if you have the quarterback on the roster and if you have the right head coach to lead this program. And there have been some questions and there have been some concerns. I was told only – I didn't listen. I don't know. I was just told only one person called into his coach's show this past week when normally that number is much higher, right, which was a belief that, you know, people are already kind of getting tired of all this. Year one of Shane Beamer. I mean, we've had people call into this show saying they should get rid of Shane Beamer. Already one season in, right, you're growing a little tired of him. Or at least the direction of this program in year one under him. But to go out and get a win like that against Florida, even if it's not the same Florida team, even if, just hypothetically speaking, you go out and you lose to Missouri on Saturday, to get that win in year one is big. To try to show that, hey, we do have the right guy. We can win games like this. We can go out and put performances like that together. We can go beat up on a Florida at home. Right, we haven't seen that before. So to do that in year one is a big-time win for that message for the future. Plus, it helps in recruiting. And just, of course, it helps. Every time you win, winning cures all, as they say. And when you win by 23 as a 20-point underdog, that helps even more. And when you play as well as they did, right, that's even a bigger boost. So to get that win in year one like this, when prior to Saturday they didn't have a real impressive win to write home about, now you do, and that's good in year one of Shane Beamer. We'll do tomorrow on the show where I was right, where I was wrong. Clearly wrong about this game. I took Florida to cover the 20. I didn't feel great about it because these games typically are close, even when South Carolina loses. But I just felt Dan Mullen, his team's going to come out fired up. He's going to send a message. He did send the message. It was the opposite message of what I was anticipating, that his team was not interested. And we caught up with Alan Taylor, who covers Florida, and he said, we'll know when they get off the bus, right? Which was that same idea. Which Florida team are you going to get? You'll know right away. And we got the bad Florida team that wasn't interested, you know, had quit on their coach. This team's packed it in already. And the Gamecocks took advantage, and they were more motivated, and they played much better, and they were hungrier, and they went out there, and they got the big-time win. So credit South Carolina. Don't take anything away from them, right? Dan Mullen says afterwards, well, we had 20 to 30 guys out with the flu. And now's not the time for your excuses after the game once you lose. Right? I don't want to hear these excuses to explain away the terrible loss. Don't take anything away from South Carolina, but for Florida, you got that, if you're a Florida fan, that performance you were dreading. I thought they were going to come out inspired, come out punching back. No, instead, they came out, you know, already packed in, uninterested, and got blown out of there. Good win for Shane Beamer in year one, and a very troubling loss for Dan Mullen and Florida now moving forward. Coming up, my reactions to Clemson's win on Saturday. Clemson at least has one thing that they have, that they've had going for them this year. And it's a very important thing. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
¶¶
Coming up, Clemson has one thing going for them this year, and it may actually be the most important. And we'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I'm trying to listen to the song for the Fox connection, right? Is there supposed to be a Fox connection? Oh.
Yeah, Fox on the Run by Sweet.
Well, there you go.
Or is it The Sweet? Depends on when they put it out.
Ah.
A lot of people actually mistakenly thought it was Slade.
Slade, Sweet, hard to keep them all straight. Google tells me that a group of foxes, a collective group of foxes, can be called an earth of foxes, a lead of foxes, a leash of foxes, and a troop of foxes. None of those sound correct other than troop. An earth of foxes, a lead of foxes, or a leash of foxes? What does that even mean? So I look forward to fox music throughout the afternoon. I can't wait to hear what does a fox say, or whatever that great hit was from a few years back.
Of course, this one here was used in Detroit Rock City in a scene where one of the guys is trying to sneak backstage, and of course the security guys are chasing him around.
Yeah, great movie.
Well, and earlier we played Foxy Lady, and that was also used in the first Wayne's World movie.
Oh, how about that? Another classic. We'll get to another 90s classic coming up a little bit later on because of something that happened in the NFL this weekend. So call that a tease. Hey, Clemson got out of there with a win against Louisville on Saturday. It wasn't pretty.
Against who?
Louisville. They played some team that's in Louisville.
Louisville.
I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Not Louisville.
Yeah.
Not Louisville.
Yeah, the Louisville
Louisville
Cardinals.
Louisville.
Yeah, that team. And Clemson found a way to win, and that's what is most important. And they got out of there with a victory. I can't wait for the Clemson to play the Bengals one day, too. I'm looking forward to that. Do the Bengals have any songs about foxes? We could play some of those this afternoon.
Now, would that also be called the Mispronunciation Bowl?
Yeah.
You know, since either team would be playing Clemson?
Well, I mean, the Bengals thing, I don't know. That's up to that's up for
Bengals,
debate,
Bengals.
Yeah, that's more debatable, I suppose, than Louisville.
Over and maybe the Bengals could play at halftime.
There you go.
Reunited Bengals. Yeah.
I would tune in for that. We get Joe Burrow go up against Clemson again. But Clemson got a win against Louisville over the weekend. And it wasn't pretty. And, you know, didn't always look great. But they got out of there, most importantly, with the victory. And I think it shows something about this team. We have to change our perception or perspective for this Clemson team this year. Because, of course, the goal going in was to compete for a national championship. We quickly found out this is not a national championship team. So you can look at everything still through that prism of competing for the national championship, and those can be the expectations moving forward. But for this year's team, we have to change how we look at them because we know this is not a national championship contender this year. So even though they only win here, you know, they beat these lousy ACC teams by one possession each week. They're playing single-digit games every week. It's coming down to the fourth quarter. They had to score the final 13 points just to win on Saturday. As a Clemson fan, based off of what you've seen in recent years, you think, like, wow, this is terrible. And it is based off of the last couple of years. But when we look at just this season, in a vacuum, forget about what they've done this past year. Right? Clemson does deserve some credit for finding ways to win because that's what's important. That's always the most important thing for a team. Now, should they be playing these close games where it comes down to a fourth quarter drive against these fellow ACC teams? No, I'm as surprised as you are that this is where we are here in 2021 with this program. But it's the position we're in, so we kind of just have to accept it at this point. And now look at these games for what they are. A Clemson team that isn't as dominant in the conference anymore and needs to find ways to win. And they're doing so. 4-1 in their last five games, and all of those games really coming down to the fourth quarter where they make big plays in the fourth quarter. In fact, for Clemson, they're coming off back-to-back game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. They did it last week. They did it this week. Again, two teams that you never thought it would come down to a winning touchdown drive in the final 5 minutes of a fourth quarter. But again, that's the position we're in with this team. We kind of just have to accept that. We have to move past that. And when you look at Clemson, back-to-back game-winning drives in the fourth quarter, last 2 weeks to win, first time they've done that since 1974. First time that they've had back-to-back fourth-quarter comeback wins. Since 1974. DJ played the best game of his season, had a season-high number of yards, 220. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that is for him in this offense. Three total touchdowns. And while it was the young running back, Will Shipley, last time, you know, this time it's him on the quarterback run with 4:12 to go to give Clemson a lead they never surrendered. He delivered the go-ahead and eventual game-winning touchdown, and he did it all while banged up, you know, injured, playing his best game of the year with a banged-up knee. But the reason why I think that this is the most important part for Clemson is because finding ways to win, that's the hardest part to figure out. It's like what they'll say about quarterbacks, right? You can't teach size, so you'll take a quarterback who's just a big guy and you'll teach him all the other things. For Clemson or for all football teams, it can be hard to teach how to win. You can have all the talent in the world, but great teams don't always win because they just don't know how to put it together. Did you watch Matt Stafford last night? It's kind of the concern with him. Great talent, but just makes these ridiculous plays and decisions, comes up small in the big moments, doesn't know how to win the big games, can't do it. Has all the talent in the world, right? You can have talented teams that just can't get over the hump. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. I watch my team every week compete on the same, you know, playing field talent-wise, every team they play. There's a reason why these are all close games, because they're no worse than these teams they're playing, but there's also a reason why they're 2-5 in one possession games. Why? Because Mike Zimmer, Kirk Cousins, they don't know how to win the close games. Clemson does, and that's important because you can always add the talent. They'll fill out the talent. This team is not one of the best teams in the country. They could be once again next year. They'll continue to recruit well. We saw what they've done the last couple of years. Maybe all you need is an upgrade at the quarterback position. That will disguise a lot of the issues on this team, and if you get the right quarterback, you can go out there and go compete for a playoff spot again next year. But winning is the hardest part to figure out, not talent. You can go recruit. You can bring in talented players. The getting the talent on the roster is not the hardest part. You then have to use that talent to actually go out there and win the game. And for Clemson, say what you will, no, these games shouldn't come down to the fourth quarter, last possession, struggling, you know, coming down to a goal line stand on Saturday, took two fourth down stops for Clemson just to get out of there with a win. It shouldn't get to that point, but it's at that point because that's where we are at this program. And now that it's at that point, I think it's big on them to find ways to win. They do it each week consistently. We've seen teams quit. Florida, Dan Mullen, we've been talking about that this afternoon, right? They saw early on, yeah, we're not going to have the season we thought we were. They checked out. Clemson, we found out early on, yeah, we're not going to have the season we thought they were. They did not check out. Right? They're still going out there and battling. They're finding ways to win. So call me an optimist. This, of course, is not the season Clemson was hoping for. But what's important is that you see they still find ways to win. You can improve the talent. You can add talented pieces to a roster. That's the easier part. That's much easier than a team, especially a young team, first-time starting quarterback, freshman running back, right? Some young pieces. The defense is experienced, and we saw that, you know, they made big plays on Saturday in the fourth quarter. But it's important to have that ability. You can teach the other stuff, just like a quarterback. You can't teach size. I'll take a quarterback with a big, strong arm size because you can't teach that. You could teach him how to read a defense, teach him the playbook, all that sort of stuff. That's the easier stuff than bringing in, say, just a Kyler Murray to pick out a small quarterback and hoping that he can play bigger than he is. No, that's just what you're getting. That's the guy. Right? I'd rather have a team that maybe isn't as talented but knows how to win compared to a team that's really talented and doesn't know how to win, because it's easier to fix the talent portion than it is figuring out ways to win close games in fourth quarters. Clemson seems to have that figured out even in a down year this season, and that's important. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
The fox went out on a chilly night. He prayed for the moon to give him light. For many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh. Many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Talking about Clemson's ability to find ways to win games and why that's important. You know what really hurts them, though, is the stupid fact that Wake Forest UNC can play and it doesn't count as a conference game. If it did, Wake Forest would have a conference loss and suddenly be looking at that Clemson-Wake Forest game as the championship for the division, giving Clemson a better chance to go to the ACC title game still. Unfortunately, doesn't count because this whole thing is stupid. And Wake Forest is still undefeated in the ACC and a two-game lead on Clemson with those two still to play, making that game not quite as important. At least they found a way to win on Saturday once again. Hour 2 coming up next. We'll get to the NFL. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.